welcome to Gin and Topic. We have tasted the gin and now we get on to our topic. Hey, Anya.
Hello, Sarah. It's Friday and we're about to learn something and drink some gin.
We are. What could get better than that?
Honestly, I don't know because we've been doing this for 6 series, so clearly we enjoy it.
And hopefully others do too. So, drink and let's learn.
Let's learn. See you in a minute.
Hey, Anya. It's another week. It's another gin. It's another topic. Yay!
Yay! I'm mainly excited about the gin.
Well, of course. Always.
Of course.
Always. The gin. And the topic has to excite us, you know? That's the kind of the bar of, you know, does the topic do it?
I'm like a date you have to impress. I'm like, come on, show me your topic. Make it worth my while.
Whereas the gin, easy. You're just easy. Anything will do.
For gin, I'm a slut.
Brilliant. And I'm glad you are excited because it is a gin that we do like.
Yes.
So that is quite good. I am quite excited for a gin I like.
Me too. What's the topic then?
Okay, so obviously we tasted our gin on Tuesday and we are drinking Isle of Harris gin. yum. And now with the topic, we are talking to Dr. Will Brownlee, who is an environmental biologist at the UK Centre for Ecology and Hydrology.
Right.
Which, bizarrely enough, last week's guest was from the same place.
No way. Oh, we're just sticking to little groups now.
Yeah, it's like we're doing a little internship in that little centre.
Anyone else from the centre joining us?
No, they're the only two. They're the only two. Okay. Just happen to be each week. So, you know, but we're not talking swamps. We're not talking methane. We are talking toxic algae.
Is that extremely different?
Well, I don't know because it's... So for 3 weeks now, we've had a bit of a theme. So we've had plankton...
There's a theme going.
We've had plankton physics, which is a bit algae-like.
Yeah, yeah.
And so whether there's some physics that we could show off knowing in this episode?
Oh, God. It's like there's a sudden quiz that I wasn't aware was going to happen.
Or we can just show ourselves up by not remembering even when it was only a couple of weeks ago.
In my defence, it's actually been a few weeks for us in between recording.
That's true.
So,
that's true.
Yeah.
That is true. But still, you know, it is only weeks, not months or years. But it's amazing how quickly little snippets can fall out.
Everything, yes.
So we'll see how much we can remember. And our question is, should we be worried about toxic algae blooms?
Yeah, I feel like we've talked about them before and they're a bad thing.
Exactly. I think so too. Because in terms of why should we care about plankton, the blooms were one of the reasons.
They were. Oh,
but
shit.
Maybe we're going to learn more about, because what we didn't really get, we knew that they happened. We knew they happened for a long time, you know, all over the place and all the rest. But we were really talking about plankton and how cool plankton was. So maybe now we're going to get the real dark side of the algae.
I love a dark side.
Rather
I'm
than
a massive
the plankton, plankton positiveness.
Yes. Fuck the positive ones. I love a morally grey topic.
So maybe we're going to go real dark with toxic algae. We will see. And we'll drink a non-toxic gin whilst we do it.
I think that would be advisable.
Welcome to Gin Topic, Will. Thank you for sharing your gin with us on Tuesday. And to remind those that haven't listened yet, we are drinking Isle of Harris gin. And we are now going to get on to our topic. And this week, our topic is toxic algae. With our question, should we be worried about toxic algae blooms? So, Will, you get to relax now.
Yep, this is the scary part.
And you get to drink your gin and enjoy supping your gin. For those listeners that didn't hear, that was a double thumbs up. Not just one, but a double thumbs up for gin drinking. So you get to drink your gin. Anya and I will now divulge how much we know. And what's really interesting this week is that actually we're not coming to this topic cold, because bizarrely our guests for this series, for some reason, these last 3 weeks, including this one, we've ended up with some similar topics.
Oh, really?
So it's maybe like we accidentally arranged a theme, but we didn't. It just magically fell into our laps.
It did. It did. It wasn't planned. Like anything, we never plan anything. Yeah. We're not that organised. We're not that slick.
Oh, I'm looking forward to this.
But I would like to say, before we start talking, please do not expect that that means we know anything. Keep the bar firmly on the floor.
Okay. Because whilst our guest experts will have come with similar topics over the last couple of weeks, doesn't mean we've retained any knowledge whatsoever, because there was gin involved. Well, that's my excuse anyway. But actually, it's just a sieve-like brain. So Anya, let's educate Will. You know,
oh, sure. Easy. Yeah, totally.
With what we know about the topic of should we be worried about toxic algae blooms? And then Will can fill in some of the little gaps that are missing.
Yeah. Yeah, the niche parts. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So I remember hearing about blooms, toxic blooms, 2 weeks ago. They were bad.
Yeah. I remember that too.
Why they were bad?
Because they were
I'm
toxic.
I'm not sure. Yeah, they were toxic. Yeah.
There you go, Sarah.
Yeah, you see. So we've got algae that's toxic. It blooms. It's bad. Should we be worried? Yes, but we don't really know why. As a dog owner, in the heat waves over the last couple of years, you know, there has been that worry of, oh, can't go swimming in that lake, dog, because of blue-green algae, and that can kill him. Don't want dead dogs. So we don't, we don't go swimming in those. We were talking, and here you go. You see, I can't remember. We were 2 weeks ago. Listeners would be better informed than us, because of course our recording was a little bit longer than 2 weeks ago. When we were talking about plankton, we were talking about algae not being able, things not being able to move around, the heat, the warm layer, and that warm layer then growing more algae that then was blooming. And then we were talking about animals that would come and eat, and then animals getting eaten by other animals and eaten by other animals.
Yes.
And now I'm doing this sort of hand gestures of animals eating each other on a constant, and that toxic getting bigger and bigger until it killed a killer whale.
Yeah. So I think we've covered it, really, haven't we? I think that's everything.
I think we've done.
So I think we do need to be worried, because we don't want to kill killer whales. Don't want to kill the dogs. Jobs are given.
Yeah, over to you, Will.
Where do I start? That was. There's a lot to unravel there.
That's such a lovely way to put it.
No, but I mean, you know, the first thing that you said was that, you know, these toxic blooms are not good, and that's definitely true.
Ding. Yes.
I think the next thing you said was, or the first thing actually before that was, should you be worried? And I think we should. But I listened to one of your podcasts just yesterday, and it was a lovely woman from, I think she was from Washington, talking about climate anxiety in there. And I don't want to add to that, because or that anxiety that everyone's got about this. So I'm going to tell you about toxic algal blooms and why they're terrifying, but also there's some
not going to give us nightmares
it.
Because I'm not sure what I can do about a toxic algae bloom.
Gin will still be fun and not medicinal by the end of this podcast.
Oh, I like that. We should put that on t-shirts.
There you go.
Yeah, that's a warning sign that needs to be there just to make us feel happy.
That's it. Fun, not medicinal. So I think when you asked us for a title, I think I put in the, you know, the sort of buzzword that would be exciting. But actually, what I'm really a scientist of is phosphorus. And phosphorus is the element that makes the toxic blooms. And that's where the story sort of begins with phosphorus. Phosphorus is what we use to make things grow. So we use it as a fertilizer. Mm-hmm.
Okay,
we put
good.
It on crops.
I'm glad you went back there because it isn't, it's, you know, I'm like, phosphorus, yeah, phosphorus. I know the word phosphorus.
Sure, yeah, know the word. But know the word. Imagine I'm a 10-year-old because that's about my level.
Well, this is one of the things that I find with what I do. You know, you never pick to become a phosphorus scientist. Well, maybe some people did. I didn't. You just sort of fall into it. You know, it could be any element. Every element's got these amazing stories. And then I sort of end up now going, well, actually, this random element I sort of picked to work on is really fascinating, but it's taken me about 10, 15 years to get my head around it.
And then two people go, come on our podcast and explain it to us.
So for Jin, in like not 10, 15 years.
Yeah. No, well, so for me, I guess there's lots of different interesting things to do with phosphorus, and there's so many different stories, and there's historical stories, and there's stories to do with, you know, really terrifying things, wars, people attacking each other. There's the philosopher's stones in there. There's harvesting bones from Waterloo to feed our population. There's some crazy stuff. So I'm not quite sure where to start, but I should start always at the beginning. So,
yeah, because you've just given a really interesting trailer and I'm like, yeah, I'm in there. I'm in for all that drama. Give it to me. The whole lot.
But
you've got to take me to
start
toxic
at the beginning
as well. Yeah. You know, we need
to start at the beginning and then we'll work our way through.
Okay, I'll go for it. And I hope it's not going to be too much of a boring monologue. So we start with phosphorus. So your body, every living creature has phosphorus in it. It's part of the DNA backbone. It's part of your skeletons. It's the structural component of your teeth. So we are all part of phosphorus. And we couldn't survive without phosphorus. So from the very sort of, you know, dawn of time, phosphorus was, you know, in rocks slowly seeping out, and it was the sort of controller of life that, you know, plants would need phosphorus to grow, and then that phosphorus would be eaten by an animal, and then the animal would pass the phosphorus out, and then that would grow more crops or more plants. And so that cycle just continued and continued and continued. And then at a certain point, when humans were sort of farming, they realized that actually the phosphorus in the soil was being depleted and spread out. So then they needed to try and find more phosphorus to keep their crops growing. So at this point, they were looking for alternative sources of phosphorus fertilizer. So this is the birth of fertilizer. This was happening before people knew it was even phosphorus. You know, there was real basic tribal cultures where, of course, they would keep cattle near their crops, and the crops, you know, the cattle would shit on their crops and their crops would grow, and they would keep doing that. So there was sort of two things. There was phosphorus being discovered as its own self, which was part of the Philosopher's Stone story. So this is in Hamburg.
Not Harry Potter.
But like I said, with the phosphorus, you know, you consume phosphorus, all mammals consume, or all animals consume phosphorus in their foods. This guy was looking for the Philosopher's Stone, which was a big deal back in the sort of alchemist days, which was the idea that a stone or a substance could turn a base metal into gold. And there was this idea that it sort of went through from gold to bronze to silver to gold at the end. And he decided it must be the shimmer in urine.
As you do, because of course you go,
yeah,
I've got it.
He had too much to drink one day and he was standing there peeing and then went, oh, I've got it. That's what it is. It's gold. It shimmers.
He was pretty grotty, actually, what he did. He ended up, you know, these are really old accounts, but the story sort of goes along the lines of he collected vats and vats of urine from all the villagers, you know, in his town around Hamburg, and then he distilled it down and he found this white substance and it glowed. And he thought, I've done it. I've found phosphorus. But actually, all he'd done is he'd isolated phosphorus, the element, which is, you know, in your urine is phosphate, which is phosphorus with oxygen around it and different things. And he managed to get this glowing substance, but he didn't know what to do with it apart from go round and show it to kings and queens, which was kind of quite a big business back then, where you would do science tricks for royalties across Europe. It'd be a bit like a pop star going and doing a performance. They get paid. It was a tangible job opportunity. So he'd go around with this phosphorus, but it was really dangerous. So phosphorus is so reactive. It wants oxygen so much when it's in its single form that it just ignites, and so it's glowing. If it gets to a certain temperature, then it will just burn through things. And that's where you get phosphorus bombs and, you know, all the stuff that's illegal in the war. So that was happening. But the next side of this also was phosphorus was being used without people knowing to grow crops. And that was the thing in manure that was keeping our crops growing. So they were trying to find other ways to get phosphorus at the point where crop growth was being held back by a lack of phosphorus, and they found bones were very high in phosphorus. They didn't know it was phosphorus, but they found bones, if you crush bones down. So there's lots of these accounts of people mining. This is, you know, in the early 1800s, people mining battlefields. So they would go along and find where all the dead had, you know, so the Waterloo's the famous
one. You don't need that
one.
Leg, do you? I just, isn't it, just isn't want to grow dark? A sunflower.
It's dark.
It's really dark.
Yeah. Yeah, all of these elements have such dark, grisly history, but phosphorus particularly is really murky.
It's like a horrible history sketch just waiting to happen.
Totally. Well, there's actually a good book that's just come out in, I think it's March last year, it came out, called Phosphorus, the Devil's Element. And it's got great story. I mean, really grisly stories. But the Waterloo thing, he writes about how the British, particularly because we were an island and we, you know, had limited space to grow crops, and every time you grow a crop, it grabs the phosphorus from the soil, and then you cut the crop off and you take it away, so slowly your phosphorus is being depleted in your soils. You have to add it somewhere. So they went and, you know, 40,000 people died in 10 hours in the Battle of Waterloo, which I didn't know, but I do now. So they went and just got all this soil, all these dead bones, and grinded them up and then spread them across all of the crops in Britain. And suddenly we had this boost of agriculture.
Wow.
So then they ran out of dead bodies.
So, Sarah, you know how you always say you want to be put in the green bin when you
Well,
die?
Exactly. I'd be good in a green bin, wouldn't I? I'd be, perfect.
Well, you could be, you know, crushed and turned into fertilizer.
If you were grinded up a bit, Sarah.
You know how they also say, you know, wars, good sort of progress comes out of wars. I don't think they meant this, did they?
We need to find a good bit of acid soil for you. And you'll be dead. I'll lie next to you when I'm there. You and me will be a bushel of corn together.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Is it?
Little bushel of corn.
You and me, the bushel of corn. We'll make at least 24 Weetabix back. Anyway, so.
Oh, only if I can have my name on it. Like a little plaque. Instead of having like a bed, I want a pack of Weetabix.
Brought to you
Sarah
by Sarah.
Help this grow.
That's it.
But then it's the fact that Will's then said, but then it gets weird. Like it hasn't already.
No, it gets so weird now. But this is a definitely weird one. So we ran out of dead bodies for phosphorus. So then they decided actually a really high density of phosphorus was found in guano, in seagull or seabird shit. And there's these islands off Polynesia, and it's islands off the back of Peru as well, where these seagulls, because, I mean, it goes back to the geology of it, because the Humboldt Current was pulling down lots of phosphorus through the water from these sort of igneous rocks. You had lots of fish that were, you know, high populations of fish. So then you had lots of seabirds eating the phosphorus in the fish. And then shitting it in one place. And these islands were huge. And they thought, well, great, we've got a huge amount of phosphorus here in guano. So the Peruvian governments or the Peruvian people at that point were like, this is sacred land, and you know we have a way we deal with phosphorus, and we respect the life giving power of the guano. But of course the British and I can't remember which Europeans it was, but British and I don't know. French and Spanish.
Probably.
And, all those classically brilliant.
Probably British, so I don't offend anyone because I am British, right? So they went across, and then suddenly there was this, like a gold rush, a guano rush on seagull and batshit. and slavery, wow. huge amounts of slavery driven by this. We're taking Jeez. Chinese, Asian populations. It got really dark. People were like on these islands mining seagull shit, and huge amounts of money and wealth was built from you know, Batpoo. There's the batshit crazy thing.
They literally turned shit into gold.
Yeah, no, it totally. I mean, it was a huge, huge deal.
Wow.
It was a huge deal. So for about 80 years, agriculture was based on Chinese slavery of seagull shit.
Wow. This is dark.
It's so weird, isn't it? Yeah. So then, wow. and we'll get to the toxic algal blooms eventually. Then we ran out of guano. So then we had to go to the next stage. So there's a theme
that's
here.
That's the thing,
that,
isn't it? You go and mine it all. Eventually,
it runs
there's
out.
Not going to be enough left.
So there's like a, I think good stories, if they don't go on too long, which I am, but the good stories come in like in packs of three, you know, like the
we
three
We will
things,
always
right?
take all the good
well,
stories,
see,
so
and
just
that
keep
is
going.
The thing, with our three episodes that have ended up all together, you know, actually it is
there
this
go.
Pack of three good things that all come together.
Exactly, right. So you've got the bones, right, and we depleted the bones, and then you went to the bat shit and the seagull shit, and then we discovered, so I think this is probably happening at the same time historically, but we realized you can get phosphates from, which is phosphorus with oxygen stuck on it and minerals, from rocks. And that's what we do now, right? So
it's really dull in comparison though, isn't it? It's like
well,
bones
no.
and shit
no, it gets,
and
it
rocks.
Gets worse, Sarah. It gets worse.
Okay. How?
So our population was around 1 billion. And then suddenly with the discovery of phosphorus and nitrogen, that's a different story, but those two nutrients that we needed to grow crops, that's made our population, it's the key thing that's made our population grow to such a size now that the planet can't hold us. If we hadn't have discovered, you know, phosphorus and nitrogen, used it so aggressively, wow. so optimistically that we thought, oh, there'll be no problems. We'll just keep doing it. We'll just grow and keep growing and keep growing. And what's
happened? Fine.
It'd be fine. But what happens is it's a bit like Pandora's box where you open the box and the devils come out and you can't put them all. I can't remember the story properly, but the idea of it is, or the metaphor is supposed to be that, you know, there was a nice circular cycle at the very beginning where, you know, the cow, the mammal, the T-Rex, whatever, ate the plant, shat it out, you know, ate the phosphorus, and then the phosphorus came back and it was nice and circular. And suddenly we started to mess with this, and we started taking bones that should have stayed in the ground and using them to grow crops. Suddenly we used all the guano that had been there for millions of years and suddenly turned that into, and now we're mining rocks that should, the phosphorus should stay locked in there, and what's happening is we're growing huge amounts of crops, but we're letting it leach out across our soils. We're eating huge amounts of food with our huge population. All our phosphorus is coming in and going out of us.
Which means there's more phosphorus that needs to go in because we're taking that out and the soil's still depleting.
Yeah. And then the phosphorus that keeps things growing in our crops, when it goes into water, and that's where you get your toxic algal blooms, is because it's the one thing that's stopping these algal, you know, algae in your water have got everything they need to grow apart from phosphorus in most cases. So they've got light and they've got carbon, they've got silica and they've got sunshine. The one thing that stops them taking over is phosphorus. So as soon as phosphorus gets in there, and we're talking a teaspoon of phosphorus in an Olympic-sized swimming pool will give you an algal bloom. You get these huge green things. Tiny amount, right? So then things switch within, you know, a matter of days. As soon as you cross that threshold level, it's not like a linear thing. It happens like, and then you get to a certain point where these algal populations are dominated by cyanobacteria, the blue-green algae you were talking about earlier, Sarah. Mm-hmm. And that's when things get really, really fucked up because they're releasing toxins and they're killing everything and they're taking all the oxygen out of the water. So the fish are dying. They're blocking sunshine. So all the algal, all the macrophytes, all the water plants, they're dying because they can't get light. All the fish are starving of oxygen and then they beach themselves. And then you just end up with a mass of water that's really toxic. If your dog swims in them, as you said, Sarah, the dog will die.
Dead dog.
Dead dog, not good. And you know, it's really bad for humans as well. You know, there's reports of... you know, linkage. I mean, if you were to drink algal bloom, you would be very, very, very sick. You would most probably die. There's links of communities living around algal-bloomed lakes that have a much higher prevalence of ALS. Is it ALS or ASL? You know, the neurodegenerative disease.
ASL is American Sign Language. ALS sounds like a pop group.
That's JLS.
You're close.
There you go. JLS.
That's exactly what happens. There's a lot more JLS around that canal.
JLS just emerge in the river.
Suddenly come up.
Everyone's just singing Beat Again on a loop.
Really painful dance moves all the way.
Nightmare.
So that's why it's toxic. So look, that's where we're at, and globally we're at this point where we are addicted to using phosphorus at rates that we can't control. And when you look at where the phosphorus is coming from, that's also a bizarre story, because we have this sort of secret about phosphorus, or it's not a secret, but people don't see it. It's not in the public domain so commonly that, you know, we are completely, our agriculture systems, the way they're built at the moment, are completely reliant on phosphate from rock, right? Mm. And 70% of the phosphate rocks reserves in the whole planet are in Morocco. There's some tiny amounts in Russia. There's some tiny amounts in China. And there's some tiny amounts in
the
US.
And we're not going for the ones in Russia right now.
Exactly. So you've got Russia, China, the US, and Morocco. All of Europe is completely dependent on importing phosphorus. Though they have discovered some in Norway about a year ago. But, you know, your food security is completely reliant on phosphorus, bringing it in from different countries, which is kind of mental if you said to the public, oh, do you realize that you couldn't grow any of your food without having a bipartisan deal with Morocco?
Stick that in your UKIP pipe and smoke it.
Yeah, exactly. So it's weird. You know, you've got this sort of point where we've got one side of the sort of phosphorus paradox where we're desperately trying to get more and more phosphorus all the time so we can grow enough food. And in opposition to that, we're trying to reduce the phosphorus because the water is getting completely toxified in algal blooms. And you've got this collision of two movements where you've got agriculture on one side going, we need to keep the phosphorus going. And you've got the water guys going, you've got to stop because you'll kill, you know, drinking water. So, yeah.
I was going to say, when you said about the paradox, it's not a we and a we, it's a them and a them. You know, it isn't one body trying to balance, it's two competing with what should be done. And of course, agriculture is quite a heavy hitter.
More of a heavy hitter
than our water companies.
Well, the water companies, that's an interesting one, isn't it? Especially in Britain at the moment. There's got to be a need for them to.
And there is a big movement, isn't there? There's been a lot in the press about the quality of our beaches, the quality of our waters, you know, the ability to do wild water swimming that came out of nowhere.
But everyone's so bloody got to trendy. Do it. It's like gin. Gin got trendy. Now it's wild water swimming.
Wild water swimming with the gin afterwards.
That'll be the next podcast idea. We'll all be just swimming along recording.
Too cold. Too cold.
No.
But, you know, there is a huge drive to try and clean up our waters. But there's also the high need to feed a growing population. And is there a clear connection properly all of the time in the argument with the fertilizers and the phosphorus and the water and the algae? I know there is scientifically, because you've just been telling us, but is that then put into the argument, or is it going, oh yes, well, it is a little bit of an issue, but there's also some other stuff that's got nothing to do with us and is out of our control. And, you know, I'm such a cynical person.
No, it's good to be cynical because it's probably more realistic. I mean, there's this sort of level where there's a really obvious solution, which is go back to that system that was there in the very first place, which is, you know, the fact that, okay, let's just take all the phosphorus that's coming out the back of animals and put it back on our crops. And we're already doing that quite a lot with manure, but we're still wasting it. And it's the cynical side of it.
But that's still running off from fields into the water system, isn't it?
Yeah, but we can do, there's so many opportunities here where we could, you know, just little things like, you know, don't, you know, put fencing next to rivers so cows don't go and shit in the river, or you know, put the right amount of manure on for your crops, or do soil testing to work out how much phosphorus. There's been a push, I guess, from, you know, different industries to apply lots and lots of fertilizer. Keep going, because there's no risk. And then, you know, even if your crop doesn't use it this year, it'll be there next year. And it's not, because it's getting washed away. But, you know, we could just minimize that. There's some great farmers that are really invested in positive solutions. There's actually a farm, a London farmer, when we were talking to Emma earlier, I was thinking of him, who just hasn't used phosphorus for, or phosphorus fertilizer for, you know, his whole, you know, the last 10, 20 years. And there's enough phosphorus in the soil. And he's, you know, recycling his phosphorus that's on the farm to just keep growing indefinitely, which is an amazing. I mean, that's the solution.
That's really cool.
The downside of doing that is that you have a fertilizer industry that isn't selling fertilizer. And, you know, that's lots of jobs and lots of people out of work and very, very strong lobbyists that would not
We're
want
back
you to
on capitalism
do that.
Again.
I mean, look, I'm an environmental scientist. I can't say that. I mean, capitalism is the problem of all of these things. I mean, it just is. You know, there is a drive to make money. We need to produce food, and you know, I'm as, you know, reliant on the agriculture and the farmers as anyone else to produce food. But there's definitely ways we can do it with phosphorus and other nutrients, nitrogen, in a much more effective way, and we can build amazing systems that benefit the farmer. So you can take your manure, for example. And you can put it in a biodigester, which is like a fancy composter in a way, and then it produces bioenergy. So it produces all the methane that you were talking about from your podcast the other day.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you've got a farmer that's got a free source of energy, and then the leftover residues has got all the phosphorus and nitrogen in, and then they put that on the field, and then you don't need to buy fertilizer, and, you know, everyone's winning. And then you're not, you know, you're basically taking your thing that would pollute your water and you're turning it into your fertilizer. So there's pockets of energy across Europe. There's Japan are doing really cool stuff with recovering phosphorus. You know, there's loads. So this is the positive sort of, not the ending to it, but the positive sort of, you know, concluding bit of this whole story is that it's terrifying, right? There's algal blooms like you wouldn't believe happening all the time. And I can tell you horror stories of, you know, the Beijing Olympics where they put in the Olympic Village and they didn't have enough sewage and it went algal bloom overnight. And the, where they were doing the sailing thing, it just turned into a green bog and they brought the army in to move
wow.
it. And it cost the city of Beijing, you know, millions and millions, you know, or wow. Toledo in US where they had an algal bloom and then they had to bring in the National Guard to bring water supplies to people for 5 days, or, you know, the toxic blooms that got into a dialysis center in middle America and 15
Jeez
people died.
Christ.
Okay, so we've been talking here about, you know, we might not be able to go wild water swimming, but, you know, these are killing yeah. people, causing huge issues.
Where I am at the moment with the work I kind of do, we've got so much information and scientists understand the system so well. We can predict these things really well. We can predict, you know, the amount of phosphorus in the water. We can say, oh, in 2 weeks, that's going to bloom. But we're actually at the sort of level where actually the trick to it now is communicating and saying, look, we've got all the solutions. We've got lots of solutions. Can we just implement them? So I'm always sort of on the hunt for photographs and
stories.
Because
who wants to listen to the scientists, right?
It's because they get pissed and talk too
if
much.
We've learned anything in a pandemic, it's that nobody wants to listen to the scientists.
There you go. I guess we'd say an unpopular stories quite often. So I get the trick is trying to captivate imagination and offering opportunities is a bit cliche, being like, well, you know, the solution could make you lots of money. But I think it's actually
there you go. Money, money, money.
I think it's emotionally getting people invested in it. And yeah. You have these pictures of lakes in, I don't know, America where they have, you know, beaches where children are supposed to be playing, and then, you know, at the end of summer every year they're just completely green and you can't go anywhere near them, and, you know, the lifeguard towers are empty, and, you know, those sort of things. You know, they're sad, you know, not to say, you know, whales beaching themselves because they've died of toxic shock all the way around the coast of Chile because of, you know, these algal blooms. I mean, so there is a solution to it. And it's really quite simple. Like we're saying, is that you just, you know, we just need to get back to that circular system. But that's the same thing, I guess, for carbon, and it's the same thing for nitrogen and, you know, plastics, and, you know.
And if we don't, if nothing changes, what's going to happen? Because are these just going to get more and more frequent? Are the blooms going to last longer? Are there, you know, what's the prognosis for
Well, I feel like this is the miserable bit, Sarah.
But it's all right, because I've got gin, and we'll turn it around again in a minute. But
so I guess there's this I can't remember who wrote it. There's a great paper that Iddy talked about. The stable states regime, and what that means is there's like ecosystems that are really, really stable, and there's really biodiverse stable ecosystems where, you know, all the animals and everything is in harmony, and, you know, it's all Garden of Eden. But there's also stable
that
regimes
plays
where
the happy music,
exactly right. And then you've got a completely stable ecosystem, which is an algal bloom, which is everything's dead, but it's completely stable. It's not going to change. It's not going to rock. You know, they've got one algal, you know, population. So this switch between the states from really happy, lovely to apocalyptic, that doesn't sort of slowly encroach. It pops. It goes. And the analogy is a bit like leaning over a boat. So if you lean a boat and nothing's happening, and then the boat turns over and suddenly you flipped between states. So you've gone from biodiverse to fuck all, and, you know, it's a desert plague, horrible system, right? The energy to return to the other state isn't, you don't turn the volume down and go back to the other one. You have to actually reduce the phosphorus much more than that point that you slipped over, that tipping point, right? The problem is there's all of these lakes around the planet, and lakes are really just, you know, parts of rivers. They're just the sort of laybys of rivers that are just encroaching on this level, and they're going to start popping everywhere, and suddenly you're going to get more algal blooms popping up each year, and to return them to the pre-algal boom state, it's going to take huge amounts of money and energy, and so it's scary, because you're like, and climate change also squashes all of that, because the level the algal bloom happens, the concentration of phosphorus where the algal bloom happens is reducing as climate, as heat, you know, makes the whole system more squashed and more dangerous. So yeah, you know, it could be kind of interesting the next 10, 15, 20 years where suddenly, you know, this sort of chaos of climate change meets nutrients and meets all the, I don't know if there's enough bandwidth for people to be able to understand and take an interest and act on all these different pressures that are happening. I don't know what you guys think when you do all these podcasts.
Well, it's interesting as well, isn't it? Because listening to you talking about all the various places where these are causing major issues, obviously they're not the UK. We're worried about wild water swimming in a lake that isn't very nice at the moment. But, you know,
we
you just
to
wait.
Distance ourselves that little bit.
Yeah, you wait until the heat wave's over, and then, you know, it will go back to normal. So I wonder whether, like lots of things, unless it properly affects us.
We're cynical today, aren't we? We're like, the population don't care unless it's on their doorstep.
Well, not the population. I was going to say the government. But anyway, that's my own soapbox all the time.
It's definitely affecting Britain already. I mean, there's the biodiversity, the depletion of biodiversity is bigger in freshwaters than any other realm, you know, in forests or, you know, and that's in Britain. And there's loads of rivers and lakes that are failing on the levels that they should be achieving for phosphorus. And so these algal blooms, I mean, so we've got Loch Leven near where we are in Edinburgh, which is like one of the oldest data sets of phosphorus monitoring in the planet, which is kind of cool. And we completely thought we had it handled. But actually this year, because it was a real hot summer, we got an algal bloom again for the first time in years. And, you know, so it's, I don't think we're protected. I think Britain will be just as affected as anywhere else. I think that's the scary thing about it, that it's not, you know, it's not just, oh, it's somewhere else. You know, it's it's actually well within any land that has agriculture, because, you know, as we're farming, you know, that phosphorus goes off. And because we're quite a rich nation, we've been whacking fertilizer on everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. Easy, easy. Let's grow some more. Throw some there. We'll grow some more. We'll throw some there. Okay. So can I understand something? Because as we said, we've had these 3 weeks of similar topics building up. Mm. So in plankton physics, we were talking about the algal blooms that were happening with this warm layer that was enabling things to grow. And, you know, one of the things that was sort of suggested or has been worked on was using bubbles and things to sort of break up the flow and to move that warm water around, etc., to then sort of help reduce those algal blooms within there. And apologies if I didn't get that right. I'll listen to the podcast later to double check on that.
Good to me.
Then in swamp methane, good. I'm passing the test. Then
I'm there going, oh my God, look at her. She's really putting the work in. Go on, Sarah.
And in swamp methane, you know, obviously we're looking at that methane and therefore that contributing to those burning lakes and that the algae blooms within there. And again, now we're talking about this lock and we're talking about last year and the hot weather and everything, and then suddenly an algal bloom. So what's the connection between all of those and the sort of the balance that is to play with phosphorus, global warming, methane?
I mean, I think the connection for me, I might be biased, but phosphorus is the connection. So phosphorus is the bottleneck. That's, you know, phosphorus is the thing that makes things grow. And when you're talking about your algal growth, in the first of the three of the triptych, and you're moving oxygen around, you're trying to, you know, disturb this. What you're really trying to do is you're trying to put oxygen back into a system that is so depleted of oxygen. And the reason it's depleted of oxygen, I think, I'll have to listen to the podcast too.
We'll all listen and see if we got any of it right.
But the idea is what happens sometimes in these algal blooms is you have so much green matter, right? So much algal that the algae sinks to the bottom, and then the bacteria eat them. And as the bacteria are eating them, they're respiring just like we are. And they suck in the oxygen and they breathe out CO2. And suddenly the water, there's no oxygen in the water. And just like we breathe in oxygen from air, the fish are going through and breathing this lovely oxygenated water over their gills. If there's no oxygen in the water, then they suffocate. So the idea of pumping oxygen back into to alleviate the impacts of an algal bloom, you know, is already done. You see the Thames, the canal boats that go down and blow air into the water. That's what they're doing. They're putting air back in. You know, they're trying to bubble that air back in. So
a little jacuzzi in the Thames.
Exactly. If you stop the phosphorus, then you limit that. You know, the algae can't grow without phosphorus. They can't build their DNA backbone, so they're fucked. So that's the, you know, that's your limiting thing. That's why as soon as they get phosphorus, suddenly they're like, yeah, let's destroy everything. and I guess with the next example you were talking about, that was to do, remind me again, what was that
with
next
swamp
one?
With
swamp methane again, that's just algal blooms, you know, producing methane. If you stop the phosphorus, you stop that.
And so, yeah, okay. So coming, obviously, as you said, you know, that complexity with climate change and we don't want to be all doom and gloom, and gin is definitely helping. You know, there aren't as simple issues to deal with climate change, the big, big picture. But if we're just looking at phosphorus and what that can do to prevent those algal blooms, you know, that is quite a clear yes.
Well, see, the wonderful thing about dealing with nutrients, so nitrogen should be included in this, but so nitrogen has a similar story to phosphorus, which we maybe don't have time to get near, but with nitrogen and phosphorus, the same thing is that by addressing nutrients, which are phosphorus, nitrogen, and potassium, you suddenly get so many co-benefits. So just like we were talking then, if you stop your phosphorus, suddenly you stop your methane, and methane is it contributes to greenhouse gases. You know, you can turn these situations which seem really, really dire with a sort of flip of a coin. You say, oh, well, actually, you know, your thing that's polluting, we'll turn that into the fertilizer, and then we'll build a local business. And your local business will be harvesting algae and turning it into a fertilizer instead of buying fertilizer from Morocco, which is, you know, taken across the world in a big ship, putting out fossil and grinding up lots of rocks and pouring acid on it. You could do it locally. You know, there's so many solutions that suddenly have benefits for so many other environmental issues. But it's not it's not like if you address this problem, you only address phosphorus. If you address phosphorus, you address water pollution, social inequity, food security. You know, there's so many different add-ons.
And there's your mic drop moment right there.
Is that it?
That's it. You're like, you address phosphorus, you address all of these. That's boom, it. Done.
Phosphorus. There's your t-shirt.
Oh, there we go.
Golly, we had Sanctum Plankton, and now we've got Phosphorus. Oh, that's brilliant. I can see the campaign now.
Oh, I can see a whole shop of t-shirts.
I can see my wife nodding her head embarrassed. That's what I can see.
And going, where's the gin?
Yeah.
We started this podcast with Anya and I talking about the fact that we had this funny 3 weeks of topics that were very similar. And of course, then the worry is that, you know, here we are with a guest who's the third to come in this little triptych, that, you know, golly, are we going to be repeating ourselves? Are we going to be just showing ourselves up as not remembering what came before? But no, but actually really thinking about all the other stuff that is involved, and phosphorus just is explosive.
I'm forever going to be thinking about grinding up bones.
Yeah.
That's my new little down the pub, did you know, fun fact.
And it just provides more reasons for why I just need to be planted in the ground, you know, but not in a designated space.
I'm there.
Just compost heap me.
Absolutely. Totally. I mean, that's really is the solution, is that, you know, we are, all of our ecosystems run on this, you know, phosphorus and other elements, but we just circle it all around, and as long as it's staying within that circular system, then it's happy. It's as soon as we start adding in extra things that you know, the problems occur.
And I will not start singing the Lion King Circle of Life right now, but believe me, I want to.
Elton knew it, man. He knew it.
Elton knew it,
and we just needed to listen to what he was really saying, you know.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I also think that philosophy rings true for gin. And we've got a really good gin in the Isle
really
of Harris.
Good gin.
And from what Emma was saying as well, it's the gin that promotes all of the things that you've been talking about for, you know, a good ecosystem of supporting.
At the beginning, Emma asked that, and she said, why did you pick Isle of Harris? And as the conversation moved on, and I was like, no, I remember why I did it. It's because it had sea kelp, and that's to do with algae. And that,
here we are.
That's exactly it. And I was like, it looks rubbish if I jump in at the end and go, oh, no, that's why. But I have done that now. But that's it.
Absolutely. Love that it's not just at the end of the Abuse Day Tuesday either. It's at the end of the entire week. It's like a little Easter egg at the end. Thank you so much, Will. It's been really, really good. It hasn't been doom and gloom. It has been quite gory and quite scary, but I'm feeling okay. Great. I'm feeling good.
Thanks for having me. It's been delightful, really enjoyable. Thank you.
Phosphorus.
Phosphorus.
Do you know, is this going to be the series? Can we get one of these out of almost every episode? You know,
we can try.
We must be able to. We could try. Even if we don't create them with the guests, maybe we have create them
Are
afterwards.
You asking me to finally start using those copywriting skills that I went to university for 3 years for?
Ooh, there's a challenge. There's a challenge. Where I have to have a little menu of them all afterwards.
Use Lovely. Your degree at long last. Do something useful with it. For God's sake.
Come up with funny little lines for our podcast. Okay, so phosphor us.
Oh my God, that's my whole career.
Toxic algae. What have we learnt? Should we be worried, concerned about these toxic algae blooms?
We should be worried yes. and concerned. We should yes. be. But we've also learned that you can grind up bones for fertilizer. And that rocks.
And not just grinding up bones. Go and mine a little yeah. battlefield. Actually, don't, because I think the National Trust or the English Heritage or somebody would get on your back, you know.
Someone's going to have a go at you for that. Yeah. Or go and mine some bird shit. That also
but
works.
But only really good bird
but
shit.
But it's run out now, so don't do that. No. Instead, you're stuck with rocks, which is not good.
Other countries.
Yeah.
Because obviously we don't have enough here.
Yeah. So you've got to go to Morocco.
And all of that food security of being reliant on yeah. that phosphorus that's coming in and the amount that we're using because nothing else is going back in and we're feeding more people so we need more phosphorus and we're...
It's a circle
of life.
And it rules us all.
So, yes,
don't
we should be worried about it.
Keep that in the episode, Ben. Do not.
Oh, yeah. So, yes, we should be worried about it. But no, there's nothing. I'm not going to lose sleep over it because I can't do anything about it apart from maybe, obviously, as always, lobbying and choosing where I get my food from and all those other little soapboxy things. But the fact that just those elements, you know, that phosphorus being, you know, just one thing that actually could be focused on to change, to have such an impact in reducing toxic algae blooms and the consequences of them. And I really want to learn more about phosphorus and its dirty past.
I want to get that book because, my God. I also want to drink a lot more Isle of Harris gin because, it's a bloody good gin.
Might get my little sea kelp mist spray thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Jesus. I can't condone this behaviour, Sarah. I'm sorry. I just can't.
It'd be like one of those, you know, those really wanky restaurants where they come over and they lift up the dome so
and
then the smoke and the foam
off.
And they spray it on you and you're having to just sort of sit there and wait for them to do that whole routine. I'm going to do that to you next time. I'm going to make you a martini. I'm going to sit you down. I'm going to make you watch the whole process. I'm going to pour it in and then I'm going to do a little spritzy spray. I'm going to video your really unimpressed face the whole way through.
And we'll go viral on TikTok with it and everyone will be commenting, oh my God, this is so Saltburn coded. I would also infiltrate that house and kill everybody because look at how middle class that is. And then Murder on the Dance Floor will start playing and I will appear in that room.
I think we need to stop now.
Yeah, time to go.
Really cool.
Really good. Great week.
Really good. I think that's the end of our little triptych. You know, I think we now need to move on from water
to different topics.
Plankton, methane. Next week. Yes. It is
something different.
Completely different. No,
okay.
It is. It is different. Right. Good. Good gin. Good conversation. Boy, boy, boy.
Boy. I'm mind-boggled and I've got an empty glass and that is gin and topic in a nutshell.
Oh, it is. So it was good and we will fill that glass for next week. and we will our brains, Siv-like, and be ready to learn more next week.
Sarah, before next week, where can everyone find us?
Well, they can find us on social media at Topic Gin, or they can head over to our website at ginandtopic.com, and they can message us, they can, you know, interact with us on that social media type platformy thing. And of course, don't have to wait a whole week.
No.
Because we've got Tuesday Booze Day on Tuesday, introducing the gin. And they can always listen to episodes that they might not have listened to whilst they're waiting.
We've got 6 whole series. You've got 5 to go back and listen to if you haven't already. And we will see you on Tuesday for Tuesday Booze Day.
Nice. Cheers.
Sláinte.